Hi, and welcome to the Making Our Way podcast. This week, our guest is Leah Learning as we talk about her Christmas ornament maker sign swap. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, good to see you this week.
What's it do, baby?
What's been going on? Christy, welcome back.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, I know you guys like joked about me being on death's door last time, but I've never been this sick in my entire life. Yeah. It was not fun. It was definitely not fun.
What is funny is I'm not very good with stuff like that, like being sympathetic or, it's not caring. Like, I just kept thinking, like, I hope she's okay because I don't want to deal with if she's not okay. Like, she needs to just text us that she's okay because I don't know that I can socially handle that Christy's not doing well. Like, so get healthy soon, not for you, but for me.
Yeah. Yeah, trust me. I was definitely trying to get healthy soon. But yeah, that was a rough way to go. And
was it a breathing thing? Was it a cold?
Yeah, what was it? Yeah, it was bronchitis. It was the Wednesday before the Super Bowl is when I went to the doctor the first time. And then by the weekend, by Saturday, Marvin had taken me in the emergency room. I couldn't breathe. I mean, I couldn't get underneath my cough. And I'd been coughing for 4 days straight and trying all these, Jeez. You know, medicines and stuff. So we went to the emergency room. Thank God there was nobody in the waiting room, which is a miracle. I mean, that like never happens. You get to the emergency room and there's not a soul
Everybody was probably watching the Super Bowl.
Well, it was the day before the Super Bowl. But yeah. And so I'm like, you know, at the receptions desk trying to catch my breath because I had just walked across the foyer and I'm just like out of breath and she's like hitting her button, you know, like get somebody up here to deal with this lady. And they're because I was having such a breathing problem, their initial concern COVID. Was no, I oh. well, I had already been tested for COVID and stuff. Okay. They were afraid I was having a pulmonary embolism. No. Yeah. They thought I had a blood clot in my lungs. So they were like, asking all these questions. Have I been on a long flight? Have I been on a long car ride? Do I have blood clot issues? You know, all this kind of stuff. I didn't know that's what those questions were, but Marvin did. So he was like on high alert and very concerned.
Is the hospital in Missouri?
No, it's just right across Northwest Arkansas.
In Arkansas. So in my head, I pictured that y'all had to stop at the Indian casino, cash in your reward points, and then get to the hospital.
No, we went south. We didn't go over to Oklahoma. Okay. So we didn't have to stop at the casino. but yeah, I spent, you know, all day Saturday getting various tests and blood work and, you know, everything under the sun, x-rays, IVs, the whole nine yards. And then they were like, they were ready to admit me. They're like, we could send this breathing stuff home with you and you could try to see how it goes. Cause like my like blood the oxygen level was like 88, 89, which is really bad. And I'm like, yeah, I think I can, you know, recover at home. Cause the next day was the Super Bowl. I didn't want to have to watch the Super Bowl in the hospital. So like a fool, I went home and Monday, I was making it through, but our Sunday and then Monday morning, because I hadn't been sleeping and oh my God, it was just terrible. So anyway, I got some different medicine by Tuesday. I did not have to go back to the hospital. And then I started to improve, but I'm, you know, I don't know how many weeks am I 2.5 weeks into it and I'm still, you know, coughing on the regular and trying to catch my breath and stuff. So it was crazy. I mean, it was definitely crazy, but, you know, you just don't know how good you got it until you're like, oh my gosh, I can't breathe. So.
Yeah, no doubt. Breathing is the one that's really important.
That's, yes.
You know, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this before, and this is totally sidetracked, but I'm going to go sidetrack anyways. It's like this, it was like a, what do you call those guys that are like positive speakers, like the motivational speaker?
Oh, right.
Yeah. And he's talking about how to achieve what you want more than anything in life. Right, have you ever heard that one? Where he's like, it's like a guru. And he tells the guy, he's like, you know, I can get you whatever you want in life. I'll show you how to achieve it. And he's like, meet me at the beach in the first thing in the morning. And so the guy is like, 4 a.m. The guy, he's like, wear a suit. And so we're like, where's the suit? And then the guru is in the water, right? And he tells the guy, come into the water, in the suit, come in the water. And then so he grabs the dude and just holds him underwater. And he's like waiting until the dude is like freaking out and fighting him to get back up. And he's like, if you attack anything in your life as much as you just wanted to breathe, oh, you will be successful on whatever you want to do. So like, you want it as bad as you wanted to breathe, right?
Yeah.
And so anyways, that's what that just reminded me of. Anytime somebody's talking about breathing, I'm like, yeah, you gotta breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was definitely an experience I don't ever want to go through again. But now the other funny thing I did today, I went back and visited my former employer today. First time I'd actually been back to visit them at the office.
Missing those
hugs. Yeah.
She missed that insurance.
Nope. I'm good there. But yeah, it was kind of funny because I was in there and I met my replacement and stuff. And one of the guys that I'd worked with since I'd been there the whole time. And he's kind of quirky, and he comes in and we were chit-chatting. He goes, oh, did you meet Amy? And I'm like, yeah, I met Amy. He goes, we just refer to her as the poor man's Christy. And I'm just I'm like, that is not mean. But he thought it was funny. And
did you go real casual and like rub it in their faces? You don't have to dress all businessy.
Jeans on. No, I had other business related stuff to do today and go to the dentist and stuff. So I was, I was definitely not business, but I was definitely not in my pajamas with my slippers or anything like that. But
I mean, that wouldn't be too out of in Missouri. Somebody walking around in their pajama pants probably looks
pretty normal. They're like, oh, she just got back from Walmart.
I can't even argue with that. All right, what you guys been up to? Because I know you've missed me a ton, but I'll let you guys talk now.
We'll let Austin go last because I think he's had the coolest thing. I've been playing Mr. Mechanic, still enjoying the new car. So it's not a charging the battery. So I've replaced a new battery. I think I did that last week before we recorded. But since then, I've replaced the starter. I replaced the ignition, where the key goes in, all that component. I replaced the alternator previously, and it's still not charging the battery. So I ordered a new voltage regulator. That's going to take a while to come in. And I just kept thinking, like, what is wrong? Something's not right. These wires don't make any sense. And so on Monday or Tuesday, I went out there and I was like, I'm just going to untape the entire wire harness and trace where these wires go. So I start removing tape, and plugged into the alternator was a red, a blue, and a green wire. I get about 3 inches down, and those wires were spliced into the blue wire was actually green, the green wire was actually blue, and the red wire was actually yellow. So then I keep removing tape, and I get about 8 inches down, and the green wire and the yellow wire were just cut, and they're not attached to anything. They were just taped up in the harness. They were plugged into the alternator. They're just taped up in the harness, not plugged to anything. And so it's not a big deal, but I know why the old alternator failed, because it is grounded through the body, but it didn't have this other ground wire on. And I think it just overamped. That's what caused it to go bad. But I'm going, I know it's hooked up right now. I know all the components are right. I'm pretty sure I've got everything done. And I said, what are the odds the new alternator is just bad? Now, I have no evidence that this ever worked. I just know it's new. That doesn't mean it works. And so I went to AutoZone and I asked them if they would test the alternator. And this is the biggest scam. So the first thing they do is test the battery, which I didn't ask for. I asked them to test the alternator. And the next thing they test is the starter, which I also didn't ask for. I asked them to test the alternator. So then finally they test the alternator and they go, oh, the alternator's bad. I said, okay, well, I need a replacement. And they go, okay. So we go inside, he types a bunch of shit on the computer, and he goes, it's going to be $115. And I go, wait a minute. I bought this from you 2 weeks ago. Literally 10 days ago, I bought this from you, and it has a lifetime warranty. I think 10 days falls within a lifetime. Where's my replacement alternator? Yeah. And they said, well, we don't have one on the shelf, so we have to order one, which means we have to pay for one. So you have to pay for one. It's $65 plus a $40 core fee, because the one you're trading in is still in your car. So it's going to be $120. And then when it comes in, you bring us the core and we're going to refund you all of it. And I laughed. I was like, how does this make any goddamn sense? That
that's crazy.
Your doing the warranty. It's your warranty. Why is any money changing hands? Why can't you just give me an alternator and I give you this one? No paperwork has to be done. Like, this is not a cash transaction. It's a warranty swap. And he's like, that's the way we do it. Because if you have a car with brakes and they have a lifetime warranty, to bring us the old pads, you have to take them off. So we give you the new ones. You go do your brake job. You bring us the old pads back, and that's when we refund you. And I was like, I'm sorry. I just feel like I'm going to show up. You two guys aren't going to be here. And the people giving me the alternator are going to look at me like I'm stupid. And I just spent $180 because you sold me a bad alternator. And I know I was getting a little angry, but I'm angry because I spent 4 days trying to figure out what I did wrong. And what I did wrong was install a shitty reconditioned alternator from AutoZone.
Right.
So what I've been doing is basically treating this 1978 Toyota like an electric car. And I just come home every night and charge the battery back up and then drive it all day. And then I come home and it still has, you know, 12.2 volts. So I hook it back up to the charger and charge it up again. And then I'm going to drive it to work tomorrow with no alternator. And I'll get to work fine and it'll get me home, I hope.
Are you enjoying driving it?
Oh, it's god awful. I've got back pain. My butt hurts. So it's a short wheelbase vehicle. So it handles every bump pretty rough. And then it's a 70s vehicle. And so the back suspension is just hard. So the front kind of handles dips in the road, but any bump in the back you feel. Then the guy, I'm in love with the vehicle and I'm having a great time working on it. But there's just been so much, excuse my language, fuckery with this thing. The seats were put in by a previous owner after it came to the States, and they're not germane to this vehicle. So I think they came from another Land Cruiser, but not a 70s one. And so the rails don't match with the mounting points. So the passenger seat the whole time you're driving is bouncing around because the rails aren't the right size. So I need to take that out and adjust those. But it's not going to fly out. Well, at least I hope it doesn't fly out, but it makes a lot of noise. And outside of that, though, the other thing is the steering's really sloppy. So it does have power steering, but the way these old 4x4s work is there's so many points in the system that can be an eighth of an inch out of whack, and over 8 points, that eighth of an inch is an inch. And so it's almost like you're driving a boat, like the whole, like those old movies where you see their hands move like, you know, left and right, but they're still going straight. That's what it's like. At 35 miles an hour, it's fine. Like, it's a lot of fun. It's no big deal. At 60 miles an hour, you're like making sure your life insurance is paid up. Like, your next of kin can be notified. And so I've driven it to work almost every day because the weather's so nice right now. And I thought this was funny. All of a sudden, I thought you'd get a kick out of it. When I was trying to figure out what was going on with all these parts, I'm looking through all his receipts, and he was charged $210 for 3D printed fixtures. And what it is the truck has a fiberglass roof, and the roof has vents in the front, and those channel to vents over the two seats. And there's 3D printed baffles that you can close. And I knew they looked 3D printed because you could see like the plate texture, but they're so bad. They're functional. I wouldn't say they actually like work, but they're functional. But it was really neat. And to see that they were 3D printed makes me go, okay, so I can 3D print in the winter. I'll put covers because I don't want the cold air. The air is coming in those vents and it's going somewhere. And this little 3D printed baffle is not closing it. So you still have cold air blowing on you. But it's been a lot of fun. It's a real piece of shit. And that's, I mean, that's what I wanted. It's, you know, it goes slow. 60 is tops. You're not going 40. It's comfortable. 60, you're asking for it. Oh, so what I was going to say is today's Thursday. Wednesday, I drove it to work, and I don't know why. I was like, screw it. I'm getting on the interstate. And so I got on I-45 South, but I waited till the last possible entrance. So I drove surface roads until I got to the last entrance before downtown. I was like, I'm just going to do it. The exit's easier to get to my office. I'm doing it. And I got on, and there was a wreck. And so I'm trying to like look behind me, in front of me. I don't really trust the mirrors because they're vibrating all over the place, trying to get through the interstate traffic in this truck while I'm clutching. And first gear is basically like a crawl gear, so it's not doing anything. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It definitely is going to keep me busy with projects. I think I've spent $1,500 on parts already. Gaskets and locks. It doesn't lock. I don't lock it because the key for the back door doesn't work. So I can lock the driver and passenger, but I can't lock the back. So I just leave it unlocked.
Is it stock ride height?
No. So it has bigger wheels and tires. And I know that contributes to it being sloppy as well.
Sloppy, yeah.
So when I bought it, my original plan, I had in my cart two new seats and rails and stock steel rims, and I was going to order stock size tires because it's actually really high. It's higher than my current Land Cruiser. So it's higher,
Oh.
it's as high as a full size pickup truck when I'm in traffic. I wanted it lower. I want to be lower, more like a toy. And so I had all that picked out, and then we decided we're buying a house, so all that's on hold.
Right.
But that will be a goal. I want to get thinner, narrow tires and steel rims and just make it more 70s, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
I did put a 7.5 inch touchscreen in it though. You know, priorities.
Right.
You know.
Real
Yep.
70s.
Yeah. So what have you been up to, Austin?
Oh man, I've been working this week, like really working. So I'm welding a I'm doing a desk, right? So I took a tanker desk and I took the top of it off, and I'm making a new top out of walnut veneer ply. And then I'm doing some edge banding, but I was worried that just 3/4 ply is not enough to really hold up to, you know, if somebody's trying to like move it around, because it's gonna be a couple hundred pounds screwed into the bottom of this walnut ply. So I welded up a 1 inch steel tube square frame, and that's what I did all day today, and got it painted to match the deck, you know, because it's like it's gonna go the tanker desk, the way that those were originally set up, it had 2 layers of ply, and then it was routed in. So those desk, the down parts of the desk would go up into the top. So there was like a 1 inch
Channel.
riser, channel. And so I was like, well, I need to do something to hide that, because I'm only going to use 3/4 inch ply. I'm not going to stack up ply. And so I bought the 1 inch metal, and I'm the way that I'm going around, I did like a little frame around each one of the lower units, and then the frame that goes, you know, so it's like all in one, but it hides that 1 inch gap, is basically what that 1 inch tubing is doing. And it's providing support to the top, because it goes all the way to like 1 inch from the edge everywhere. And so I painted that to match the down like the drawers. And then I've been 3D printing a bunch of stuff. I 3D printed a Mandalorian mask, and I
Oh,
converted
nice.
it to a welding helmet, which was really cool.
What's the feedback been on that?
I've gotten an unbelievable amount of comments, but the views are not doing that great.
Oh.
When I last looked, I had like 6,000 views, which, you know,
Interesting. Did you do any of the Star Wars hashtags? I didn't look at your hashtags.
I did like Mandalorian, Star Wars.
Okay.
You know, I don't know that many, to be
Yeah.
honest. So, and then I did like 3D printing. I didn't really show any of the build process of it because I didn't want
It's yeah.
to. It's,
Yeah.
you know, I have the footage. I took the footage, so I might end up showing it sometime. But so the visor that's on the outside, when I first bought it, I thought it was welding rated, because I don't read, right?
Oh.
I just, I'm like, yeah, that's it. It's a Hobart brand. I'm like, oh, it's a welding shield. So I was like, good enough. And then when I read it, I was like, oh shit, this is a grind, a tinted grinding shield, and grinding and cutting shield. And I was like, well, shit, now I got to figure out a way to like mount a real shield on the inside so it doesn't burn my eyeballs. And then I also had to figure out a way, because it's like, so the Mandalorian mask, for people who don't know, it's like a T shape. Like the visor is
Right.
like, it goes down the middle of your face, kind of like an old knight. Yeah, like imagine an old knight helmet. And so, and I found, you know, when you buy a welder, they give you that shitty mask,
Yeah.
that it's like a handheld mask, like you're gonna be able to use that to actually weld anything. Well, I pulled that plate out of that, and then I put that on the inside, and then when I shoved it on my head, it was perfect to where that my nose lifted that plate, and it held it against the foam that I put in there to hold my forehead back from the front of the mask. And my dad's like, what are you gonna do? Like, because your nose is like right, you know, like I'm gonna have a burned nose if I don't figure out a way to like
Oh,
look like
yeah.
Rudolph, you know? And so I was like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm just gonna tape this bitch in there, and then use, because just any kind of fabric, thick fabric will block, you know, the arc.
They
And
look like wing panty liners.
I thought it was a maxi pad.
it was a dish towel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a dish towel. And then I just masking taped it inside there. Like, you know, it was total shit show, but I just needed it for,
but it's a prototype. It's the first one. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
is it super, super dark with a double lens?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's real dark. Yeah. And so I don't know when the last time you welded with a non-darkening mask.
Yeah. Well, like you're like, how am I seeing where I'm starting?
So my old non-darkening masks were all flipped now. So you would get ready, get your position, and then swing your head down, and then it closes, it brings the mask down, and then you go. So I'm having to lean back and arch my neck so I can see out the bottom of the mask. Like,
and I, like, what about just a big spotlight or a big flashlight? To
it would have to be so bright for me to be able to see, because it's dark with a double mat. With a double lens of it. Really
so
dark.
When you sent us just the shell photo, I was going to tell you, like, oh, a popular, I asked you, did you buy it or print it? Because a popular cosplay mod is to buy the mask, take the shitty plastic out, and put the Hobart grinding lenses in there. Oh, okay. And when you said, oh, I'm going to buy a lens, I was like, oh, that must be what he's doing. And it is what you did.
Right.
But I wouldn't have known to look for grinding versus welding rated.
Right.
Do they make a welding rated lens like that?
I don't think there's any that are flexible because they're pretty thick. Right. You know, I think there's a lot of layer. I think the construction is there's a lot of layers in between, and that's how they're getting that the darkness. But if you were really good at 3D printing, you could totally get like a auto darkening lens and figure out a way to make it work. Because they make like narrow ones, wider ones. You can figure something out, but you'd have to do a lot of modeling in order.
Or
to
even
get
like
it to
in like black and the rest or something, where it's not even lens, it's just
right. Or just print those parts black, so it looks like there's gonna be ways all around it. But it was interesting. And then, but once you spark up the TIG torch, it was easy to see through. And with because I cut out the foam and put it in there, that's like this Harbor Freight floor mat. Uh-huh. It's like that kind of foam, sort of. And so once you put it on, it was like super comfortable. And when you talk through it, you pretty much sound like the Mandalorian.
It's a cool project. I mean, I hope you revisit it or maybe come up with some other versions. I think you'll get some traction. I was curious if you had a lot of people talking shit about that's not safe or that's not this or that, but I thought the execution was pretty good.
Normally, so like I need the video to go further to get to those people who are going to shit on it. So
I also like that the manual machine is turned into a 3D printer and laser aficionado.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I embrace learning new stuff. I want to learn new stuff all the time, but what's held me back is my digital capabilities. But like this guy I don't even remember what his name was, designed this mask. And I'm like, that is killer. Like, and then I saw where people were putting welding shields in them. And I'm like, that is the money. Let me find a welding shield that's dark enough. And then, that's where I'd already bought it all. And then I was like, fuck, this is not welding rated. Cause I think I was talking to Keith. He's like, you can't weld with that thing. That's like a sunglass lens. And I was like, oh, really? And I went and read it. I was like, damn. So, but I did. So I've been wearing it everywhere, like around the house and shit, because it's basically like wearing sunglasses. And I was like, right. I need to drive with this thing on and just like film like looking at people and shit.
Not with the welding lens in it.
No. Just the grinding lens. Because when you walk outside with a grinding lens, it's just like you're wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
It's not that dark. So
you said something a minute ago I wanted to ask you. You said you weren't going to double up plywood. What's your reason on that?
The one layer was $200 worth of plywood because it's walnut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do know, I mean, I've glued 2 3/4 inch together and I think it makes a great work surface. And I have heard that if you fiberglass between the two, that it makes it super rigid and strong. But I knew you had said walnut. I'm like, well, you're kind of wasting 2 layers of walnut when you do that. And then I don't know how you would edge band an inch and a half. I don't know if they make edge banding that thick, but.
You'd have to do like solid wood as your edge band kind of deal.
Cool.
Yeah, it's coming out good. I'm hoping to be done by this weekend. We'll see.
Nice.
I know that's really, really a stretch to try to get all that done, but
heck
We'll see.
We'd like to thank our folks over at Patreon for the support that they give us. You can join them over there at patreon.com/makingourway. And on our top tier, we'd like to thank Marion Ward from Creative Ward Gallery, Scott Oram from Dad It Yourself, Ozark Spirit, Chris Shelby, Nick Birchtold, Andrew Richard Makes, and Mark and Donna with Rockin' K Creations. Tonight we're joined with Leah Hartman from Leah Learning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you kind of give us a little elevator pitch about you and what you do?
Yeah. So I'm Leah Hartman. I live in Cleveland, Ohio. For the past about 8 years or so, I designed and ran a community access makerspace on a community college campus. And now I'm transitioning to spending more time at home doing creative projects and continuing to support my family and friends in all of their creative endeavors.
Excellent. Well, we're so excited about having you on tonight. There's a number of reasons, but in particular, the thing that caught my attention that I really wanted to bring you on to talk about is the Christmas ornament that you put together for a lot of folks to put together this past Christmas. So can you kind of start with what was it?
Well, the ornament is a really small replica of the Welcome All Maker sign that Jimmy Duresta and Wesley Treat put together. Theirs is, of course, much larger, much fancier, much more high tech. This is a really tiny version made out of felt and embroidery floss and beads and some laser cut and laser engraved pieces. My excitement for this kind of started at Maker Camp. I think I'd had a little bit of an idea that maybe I wanted to do this as my maker swap ornament. Mm-hmm. And then I had some amazing experiences when we were at camp. One of the best workshops that I attended was actually one that I didn't get to participate in. Patty Gilstrap or Patty Brooklyn was doing those sewing workshops. Yeah. And I arrived a little late, but she was so generous with her time and kind of talking me through what her process was. She handed me a business card, and then she also gave me contact information so that I could reach out to her and get her sewing instructions that she was providing to everybody as part of that workshop. And I loved that so much. I loved like the generosity of that moment. I love that she was willing to share her expertise and not like hold it to like for herself, but to really kind of spread that to others. And so that got me thinking, like, what is the version of this that I can do whenever I get back home? So as I started making this ornament for the swap, it occurred to me, boy, I think it wouldn't take much to send these out to folks so that they could have that same kind of experience or a smaller version of that experience that I had whenever I had that interaction with Patty.
So did you, like, when you were making your version, did you already be like, okay, I know I'm going to need to do it this way, this way, this way? Or was for your version, like, a process as far as trying to tweak different areas or come up with different ways of doing it?
It surprisingly was such an absurd process. Like, you would think something so small as a Christmas ornament wouldn't take so much. I think I did maybe 8 versions.
Oh, wow.
So I did a bunch of little prototypes. I am not great at embroidery, and so I needed to teach myself a couple different stitches. I kept sending them back and forth, pictures, and bringing in samples to a friend who I worked with at the time, who is a graphic designer, so she could help me make some really good choices about, you know, whether this line looks good or whether we like kind of the kitschier stitch here. I experimented with using French knots versus using beads to kind of simulate the neon lights. So I tried, I think it was maybe 8 or 10 different versions.
Wow.
So whenever you are making your original version, what were your processes as far as like cutting the fabric and getting your line straight, kind of those, you know, just getting it into the shape? Because it's not like it's just a triangle or just a square or even a circle. It's like got some coming and going in different directions.
Yeah. So I must admit that I'm really, truly terrible at Adobe Illustrator. So it was a complete hack job of finding a picture online, pulling it into Illustrator and doing my worst, fastest version of image trace that I could to at least get like a rough shape of it. Uh-huh. And so the kind of red arrow shape, the blue arch that says welcome all, and then also the maker's letters were cut out from using our laser at the community college makerspace that I worked at. And that took a couple tries to get the settings right. I did have some issues. I bought out all the felt at one craft store, mm-hmm. put everything through the laser, and then realized that I needed to make a whole bunch more of these because they were so much fun. Went to another store to get the rest of their felt, put that through, and it was a disaster. Like everything burned. I think I had to go back and correct it a couple times. So process was Illustrator first, and then lasering, and then it was like a lengthier process of figuring out the kind of beading pattern and also the stitches from there.
I wanted to ask you about the felt. So was there any kind of certain felt that you put in here to have the laser process? Did you find it? Was it a color or a brand that burned? What was the choice like?
I wish I had that information. I know that Joanne felt worked great and Michael's felt was terrible.
Wow.
I wouldn't think that there would be such a difference between the two. And keep in mind, this is like a prototype of a prototype of a prototype. So this is not a product I'm selling. This is just, you know, something I wanted to try and see how this would go.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't seeking out the world's greatest, like finest materials. I think if I were to do this again, I would probably do that. I would probably spend a little bit more time on the materiality of this.
But you know what? I think if you had increased the consumable costs, you probably wouldn't have been as willing to send them out. And we're going to talk about that closer to the end. I think that's one of the most charming parts about this, because you made one of these for our ornament swap. I actually think my mom got it.
She did.
Yeah, I thought
so. Delightful, by the way.
Because I made a comment that, oh, now we both have one, and we'll talk about that later. But on the felt, how did you make sure the felt stayed adhered to the bed? And as this laser's zooming around, it's not blowing pieces everywhere and cutting off ends and cutting them in half.
Thank you for that. So we have really good air assist, so maybe that's helpful on that blog that we have at work. The larger pieces, the red arrows and the blue arc, were not a problem at all. They really stayed where they needed to. The white letters that I used were kind of a disaster. The first attempt, I just tried to use like a plain felt without any backing, and it just started burning and curling no matter what settings I tried. And so whenever I tried the felt that has kind of the adhesive back, which I really hadn't intended to do. I'd hoped that there would be kind of more gluing, a little bit more effort on your part to put this thing together. It didn't work. So I needed to use the adhesive back felt, which actually turned out okay. I would have preferred a slightly different process, but at least they held together a little bit better. There's still like crispy edge on it, but you know, wholly imperfect.
They did have a crispy edge, but the adhesive back was nice because I didn't have to sit there and get glue all over myself trying to glue them down.
Happy accident. Yeah.
And then a lot of people that don't spend time with lasers don't realize that different colors matter. Like you can't run the same settings in red, blue, and white and expect the same style cut or engrave. What was kind of the variation there, or the lessons learned as far as cutting and engraving the blue with the welcome, where it didn't, was that always the intention to just engrave it?
I tried a couple different versions. I feel like we nailed it on maybe the third or fourth try. I tried a couple of versions too. I don't think I have it with me. Where I was attempting
to, we're an audio setting.
That's true. Where I was attempting to like get the contrast a little bit better by either deepening changing the settings on the engraving, or even going back in through with like a paint pen to see like, is there another process that we could add to this? Or go in with a marker or something, but ultimately it just wound up looking sloppy. You know, felt doesn't really have a crisp edge, at least for me, it didn't whenever it came to those engraving settings. And so I couldn't really get a good look on that final product. So I went with, it's good enough. Like this depth of engraving is good enough.
Oh, it was good enough. It was really great. And so, yeah, I really like the felt. I do know that felt burns in lasers, felt burnt, blows around in lasers, and then have such small cuts for those letters and they have kind of like a Western serif or something to some of them to get that in there was really, really neat. Let's go into the details. So we have the main body made from the felt, but then you had mentioned already like the beads or the knots. So what was the process when it came to choosing the type of embroidery string and the techniques for that?
Well, the process was that I don't really know much about embroidery. Amen. It's been probably 20 years since I've really done any significant amount of embroidery. So I had to reteach myself some of the stitches. I also had to recognize as I was doing this that what worked for me at home as I was making these to send to a few folks was very different than trying to figure out what these instructions were going to be that I provided to folks. So I ultimately decided you know what? I'm just going to share what works for me because I am a total embroidery hack. And there's a good chance that a lot of folks I'm sending this to aren't really super familiar with these embroidery stitches either. So maybe what works for me will work for them. I haven't gotten any feedback from folks to say, you know, this was terrible and completely didn't work at all. So if anyone is listening who worked on this project, would like to share, I'd be happy to hear it.
No, I had a great time. And I'll tell you what else. I think I actually had like one or two extra beads. I was like, oh, that's so nice to have some spare parts in case I drop some. I will say I struggled with the embroidery thread being so thin, getting it strung up into the needle. I think I actually like ended up splitting it. Was it 8 strands or 6 strands?
Six.
And I think I ended up just going down to 3 with one. I was like, ah, fuck it, man, have another drink and power
which
through.
I think that is what I do, which I don't think that's considered quite correct, but I think you're supposed to like split the strands in smaller sections. And then I folded it over just so that I would get that thicker string. So it would have like a visually be a little bit more impactful around the edge of the shape.
Yeah. Usually when we do embroidery, we split it into 3 strands, but that's, you know, for quilting and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen it with all, just depends on how thick or how heavy, you know, you want it as you're going. So I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer at all. You can do whichever way you wanted to go for sure there.
I will say I did, of those that I made for folks that I then passed out, like I had seen Mark Adams, the photographer, at an event in Cleveland. And so I was like, oh, I'll make one for him. I'll make one for the person mm-hmm. who's hosting this event. And as I made those, I looked back at the ones I started with thinking they were fine and realizing, oh, that floss really isn't thick enough. And so I spent hours like undoing the earlier ones to make them a little bit better for the people I was sending them out to. So while you can really do it a number of ways, also the more you do it, the easier it was for me to see like, oh yeah, there really is a much better version here somewhere along this way.
Now this was a very simple project, the nature of which, you know, you sent them out to everyone. So I encourage anyone that wants to see more visually of what this looked like, go check out Leah's page, but there's a lot more to unpack here. And one of the things is you sent this out to people. So you created an instruction list, a packing list. What was that process like deciding, okay, here's the instructions I'm going to trust with people, and here's how I'm going to put all this material together and have faith that they get it and they can make a quality product without me sitting over their shoulder?
Thank you. Thank you for that question. So one of my favorite workshops that I've ever attended is one that was like a loom weaving workshop. And I think we sat for a couple hours and we learned on these little mini loom kits that you could buy online. But the delight of it is that you left with the tool that you needed. Left with some extra material so that it wasn't just the project that you had done that evening, but rather like you had that thing to take with you and carry on and continue your learning if you wanted. And so I was thinking about that a lot as I was doing this, like what really needs to go in this kit? And, you know, if I had like been able to put glue in there, I would have. It's so silly, but like I thought about, well, not everybody has a needle. Like I think I make an assumption that
everyone
would have one, but like, of course I would need to include them. What if folks don't have it? So that was definitely a consideration, like maybe put in a couple extra beads in case one gets lost, as you said, or make sure that there's like copious amounts of floss
and there
in
was.
Case.
Cause was I was there? Like, oh my God, I have such a knot. And then I realized I was like, I have tons of floss here. I don't have to. It's not the exact amount. Like I can just trash this knotted up piece that I screwed up and just worry about what's actually usable.
I'm so glad I spent hours like stringing floss in between chairs set up in my dining room, trying to make sure like, is this going to be enough? I think it is, but you know, I had undone some, so I had a good sense of how much we would actually use. The instructions themselves, I think I just thought about what I would tell folks if I was sitting there talking them through this. So not super formal, kind of cheeky, hoping that like some points along the way it would be a little bit silly and bring some laughter. That is like my favorite type of making is making something or having an experience of making that is fun and delightful and joyful. So like part of the instructions are a little bit silly.
They were.
They're very,
because you had
like,
a stop here and go have a drink.
Yeah.
That was on there. Yeah. I remember that. It was a great project because I put a movie on, sat down and started it. And then at the end of the movie, I had this because you had to wait for the glue to dry and stuff. But at the end of the movie, I had this thing I'd made that I wouldn't have made if you wouldn't have sent this kit out.
That's amazing. I should also mention for context, the week that I decided to start like actually making these, I think I bought some of the materials, but the week that I like sat down to do this, we buried my dad that Tuesday. Yeah. So my dad had passed away the week before. we had his funeral on Tuesday morning, and that Friday, like, I don't think I hadn't been to work in a couple weeks. That Friday, I like went to our makerspace and was like, I have to do so. I just have to do something creative and something that feels good and not so heavy. So instead of like sending out thank you notes after my dad's funeral, instead of like working on resumes or anything that felt really heavy, this just felt so much better. And this felt so exciting and delightful to imagine like people all over the country and some in Canada, like just working their way through this silly little embroidery project. I don't know. It's what I needed at the time.
How many did you send out?
I think I sent out around 20, and then the ones that I had made, which was maybe 8 or 10. So close to 30.
So what all was in your packet? Like when Dean received his packet, was it like just a regular size envelope? Were you able to fit it like in that small of package, or?
It was really fun to go to my local post office and have them help me with this. So it did fit in a regular envelope. I didn't think it would at first, but it was a whole lot cheaper to do it that way.
Yeah.
So it's like a one page instructional manual guide, complete with a drawing with some handwritten descriptions around it. And then, all the felt pieces, the embroidery floss, a little strand of beads, like little
gold beads. Oh, that's a good idea. Cause that's what I was thinking too. I'm like, did you just have those like loose in the envelope? That's a good idea to have them strung
together. Strung up, and not like totally tied up, just like twisted around, like looped through at the end so they wouldn't slide off. And I actually sent one to myself in advance just to make sure that it would go through the mail.
What a great tip.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Smart tip.
Just to make sure. Yeah. And it's just a non-machinable indication at the top of the envelope and, you know, a little extra postage. So not so bad. I had originally gone out to get some bubble mailers, but man, those are like $5 to send.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I think you're all wonderful, but not like $5 a pop. Wonderful.
What about your shipping? You said you sent some to Canada. Was that, were you able to do the same thing with that? Send it at the cheaper rate?
Yep. No problem.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Very scrappy. And I think they came out to maybe, they were under 50 cents a piece to make and then about $1.50 to ship.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? The shipping was 3 times the cost of the materials.
The materials.
But it was still economical as a project. So the last thing that I wanted to ask you about is, how did it make you feel seeing people receive these and be receptive and complete them and tag you? What was that feeling like? Was that what you were hoping for?
It was so delightful. It was everything that I needed. Not because I needed, I didn't even need tags. I didn't ask anybody necessarily to tag me. I asked people to like, send me a picture of yours because I just want to like see if you did it. And I want to like applaud you for the amazing work that you did. But it was so fun to see folks like sit down with a, you know, glass of bourbon or sit down with a movie, like you said, or maybe one of their kids picked it up and went through it. Like, it just was so fun to see folks trying something they may not otherwise try. And that's so much of the work that I did at the community college makerspace, is trying to get people who maybe didn't see themselves as makers, or who maybe didn't envision themselves sitting down in front of a laser or getting excited about 3D printing, to get excited, like to just ignite a little bit of a spark. We always would talk about lowering that barrier to entry. What's like the easiest version?
Oh, yeah.
How do we get people to be successful really quickly? And so for me to see so many folks in like the span of an hour, in the span of a couple days after me sending these out, like successfully make something that is like representative of something much bigger than all of us, a small version of that, was thrilling for me. I don't expect that anyone is necessarily going to take up embroidery or felt ornament making as a new hobby, but at least there's maybe a little bit more confidence that's instilled in them, and maybe, you know, a willingness to embrace a project like that in the future.
Yeah, I think that stuff that really does apply, because I mean, just even taking the little bits of, you know, assembling and then even the embroidery side of it, you know, we've done it. I've done it for like as long as I can ever remember. But I know like helping someone once they do, you know, those first little projects, or just to know that there's no wrong answer. As long as once you get it together, it stays together. There's no wrong answer. You know, whether you're doing cross stitch or straight stitch or back stitch or the little French knots, or whether your French knots are not knots or whatever, you know, I mean, it's okay. you know, it's okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's, I was just tickled pink when I saw that started to come through on the posts.
Thank you.
So we have a few segments we like to run at the end of every one of our episodes, and we're going to start with the first one. It's our newest one, and it's, you know, just shop scares. What's the closest you've come to dying or dramatically injuring yourself in the shop? And I would like to keep it down on doing this project here. Unless you've got something even crazier that we'd love to hear about, but I want to hear about that one pinprick or that one
right
swallow
under my finger
of a bee.
Yeah.
When we first opened our makerspace years ago, this is off this project, but it's not even a close call. It just shows you how stupid we were. When we first opened our makerspace years ago, our ventilation wasn't great. And also we were cutting leather for the first time. It was me and a student worker. I think he was actually a volunteer. So he might've been like 17 at the time. We're like, we're going to try this. This will be fine, right? We're not really going to kill anybody. And the smell was so noxious. We did not know what to do with ourselves. We really had a fear that maybe we were poisoning ourselves in the entire building. Like literally went outside for probably an hour just from laser cutting leather. Like it's embarrassing now, but we really were like, campus police is going to show up any minute.
No, that's a terrible smell, running leather in a laser.
It's not great. You just, it smells wrong. It's just wrong.
That's a good one. Inhalation risk. So the next thing I want to talk about is we do a thing we call this or that, where we'll give you a few options and see. And one part, and we've touched on it a few times already, where you did a stitch with the lace, I guess you call it, around to replicate neon lights on the perimeter of this sign. Well, you experimented with a few different stitches. When you finished it all and walked away, what was your favorite embroidery stitch? Like the back stitch, the running stitch? Is there something cool we don't even know about?
I went with the stitch I did, which I think is a stem stitch just because it looked the best. But I think a more traditional like edge of an embroidery stitch, I think. I mean, Christy, tell me, you would certainly know more than I
don't know what they're called, honestly. I mean,
blanket stitch is the one that like kind of goes around the edge and creates a line on the outside of it. Mm-hmm. And there's just something so like kitschy and kind of old fashionedy about it that I really love, that certainly there could have been a place for this, but I couldn't get the angles quite right. Like it just made for a sloppy edge, but I loved that. I thought it just had a very different look. So I think I would have gone with that one, but my trusted co-advisor, Sam, suggested that we really go with the straighter stitch to have that cleaner line. And she was right.
You've mentioned them already. What's your go-to hobby store? Is it Joann's, Michael's? Is there some Hobby Lobby in there?
I don't go to Hobby Lobby. I tend to spend a little bit more time at Joann. It's pretty convenient. I'm also at Home Depot many days a week.
I notice a theme throughout your posts is that you really lean on your community when it comes to getting opinions and ideas or artistic techniques to make your projects better. What do you think, you know, if you had to build your perfect pack of friends, maker friends, and use their powers to increase your projects, what do you think are three skills that these maker friends should have to help support you? Maybe those are weaknesses, or maybe those are strengths, whatever you think.
That's a terrific question.
Well, I'll tell you what, while you're thinking of that, I've got another one if you want.
Sure.
You used the word kitschy twice tonight. Would you tell our audience what kitschy means?
Also a great question. I don't know that I can even describe it. I think it's that like kind of nostalgic, colorful, used to be mainstream, but is now kind of vintagey. I don't know. How would you describe it?
Yeah, no, because it's a word that a lot of people, especially like in Louisiana, I mean, Texas now, but in Louisiana, there's so many words in our vocabulary that none of us know what they mean. We just know when to use them. And I think kitschy is one of those words. Like you don't know what it means, but it means kind of like, you know, I'm kind of decorating, but I'm not an interior designer, and it's kind of trendy, but it's really not hot trendy. It's like this kitschy thing. That's how I think of it.
I like it.
That's great. I like that.
Okay. Superpowers. Who are your three maker super friends? You don't don't name people, but what are some skills that you really appreciate in your maker friends?
I love a graphic designer. Mm. I love somebody who really has like serious, serious technical skill in design, who can take something that I do or some wild idea I have and just make it look infinitely better. That is definitely my weak spot. I love a great teacher. So I've done, for projects that we do around the house, whenever we hire out a professional, I always ask if I can like learn alongside them, because boy, that feels like the best bang for my buck. And so a couple of years ago, I had a, can I dive into a story here?
Yeah, sure.
A couple of years ago, well, many years ago now, we hired a guy to build a deck on the back of our house, and he was fantastic. Such a great teacher as we were going through this process, that a few years later, when I wanted to build a pool deck, I asked if we could do kind of a modified version of this, where he would come and spend a couple hours with me on a Saturday morning and give me enough instruction to get started. And then I would work on whatever he, whatever homework he gave me, I'd work on that for a week or two. And I, when I was ready for the next step, he would come back, teach me the next step, and away he'd go. And I'd like work as much as I could. But what was key is that he was not just great at his craft of deck building, but at explaining to me what those steps are and like understanding what it is to have a beginner's mind and considering what my questions might be as a total beginner and not as the professional that he was. So I definitely need a teacher on my team.
So we've got a graphic designer, a teacher.
And I think a good question asker, although that's often my role, but I think somebody who is willing to really ask to get to like those, the why behind the why behind the why. I think that's really important, a really important quality for any profession, but definitely for a maker. You know,
you ask good questions and you also receive questions very politely. You always say, thank you for that question.
They're great questions. Would you like to be on my team? I feel like
I'm in. Let's do it.
All right. So I like to do a question that's called three tools question. Every time that we have somebody on the podcast, I ask them that if they were going to start their workshop again from scratch, what would be the first three tools that you would acquire?
I love a laser. I really do. I think you can get to success so quickly. And in my shop, I would want others to get to success really quickly. So I would want to start with a laser. I would start with a corded circular saw. So when I built this pool deck with my buddy, day one, you know, I'm so excited. He tells me I just need like a saw and a couple pieces of equipment and some hearing protection. And he comes to my house and I have my battery operated circular saw. He's like, okay, step one in deck building is you need to go get a real saw. Totally making fun of my battery operated circular saw, but I love my corded saw. And an impact driver, because I probably used only a drill for about 20 years, not really understanding the benefit and value of an impact driver. Like I built that deck out back with just a drill. What was I doing? Would have been really helpful to have a long time ago.
Wow. Very good.
That's good.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. If you would, please tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure. I'm on Instagram as leah.learning.
Excellent.
Awesome. All right. Well, everybody will go check you out. And we want to thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for sending me the ornament project.
We like to thank the folks in the middle tier over on Patreon. We've got Tony Langer from Langer Works, Susan DePlantis from Hearth and Garden Art, Stephanie Taddeo, Kyle with Footwork Woodworking, Daniel McDowell, and Eric from Overall MakerWorks.
Talking to Leah had me think, I'm just so inspired by the project that she put together and was able to share with so many people.
Oh, yeah.
It was interesting how the cost of materials was a third of the cost of shipping. And that's something we run into every now and then. Maybe not that, but how much the cost of shipping can rack up. We sent out challenge coins for the maker ornament swap, and it got a little hairy. I was like, if I can't put stamps on these and mail them, we're going to be in trouble, because I didn't think we were going to send out so many of them.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe if we could take a second, let's try to think of some projects that as a community member, someone could do, not necessarily us, but maybe us or maybe someone listening. You know, what are some things that wouldn't be cost prohibitive, would maybe introduce someone to a new skill? You know, I think about like adult coloring book type things. It would be kind of neat if you bought an adult coloring book and you just tore all the pages out, folded them up and mailed those out to different maker friends and then just see what they do with them. That wouldn't be very expensive outside of stamps and all that stuff. So stuff like that.
that would be a cool idea, because you might like send it to a woodworker, and instead of them coloring it, they could use it as a template, and it, they cut out pieces of wood that match the original.
Or get different piles of sawdust that are different colors and glue sawdust. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's,
I think we might have come up with the best idea right off the bat.
Yeah. Well, and rather than pulling out different pages from a coloring book, design a coloring page to where everybody has the same colored, the same page, the same design, and then see the variations.
Yeah, I do think the same designs would drive those competitive people to try to really put forth the effort.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You send everybody something different. I think it would be nice to have that collage at the end, mm-hmm. but yeah, you would get some people that just wouldn't do it because they don't feel the connection maybe.
Yeah. Maybe three that they could choose from or something.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, maybe send them a front and a back, or, you know, they've got two right there. I think whatever you send, it has to be light. Mm-hmm. Because you can't mail metal, you can't mail liquids. So it would need to be paper, felt, cloth, string. That wouldn't be a bad one. What if you sent somebody a sheet, an instruction sheet like she did, mm-hmm. and some string, and I don't think you throw in nails, but you do one of those string art things.
String arts, yeah.
I've never even tried that. I've never been motivated to try that.
I've never had either. But if
somebody
cool.
sent me a challenge in the mail that, hey, here's a design, 20 of us are going to all try to do the same thing, let's see what you come up with. That'd be neat.
I did one of those for Jamie. It's our for last Valentine's name, Day. I think so. Yeah.
Oh, so
it's like this big, and it's the background. I like wrapped this. I actually went to Target, and they had a print of Paris. It was like the map of Paris. It's black and white. And I stretched that over a piece of wood, like wrapped the wood with it, and then drove in our letter S, and then used black string or whatever.
That's a good idea.
That's cool.
You could get someone to do that with just the directions. Like, hey, here's the project. It's almost like how they release the maker collab or whatever ideas on that day. But so you're sending like, hey, I'm sending this to 20 people. Here's the design. Here's what we're going to do. Put your twist on it. Have it done by this day. And then we'll all reveal all our projects together and get some cross-pollination. That's cool. Some of those decoupage posters where you take a poster, maybe it's an old or a torn or a ripped one, and you tear it up into pieces, and then you go get some foil paper and you reconstitute it on a canvas. So you have these like tears or rips, but it's got a contrasting color or another piece of paper or something behind it. It almost looks like an ad that's been put up, 20 of them on top of each other, and the pieces are pulled off. Kristen did those when we were in college, so that's over 20 years ago, and they're still hanging up in the house right now.
That's cool.
You know, one thing, back when we were building boards, I was doing, when I bought the surfboard company, the glass shop, we did like 40 other brands boards. Like we would do the glass work. They would bring in the shapes, we'd glass them, and so it was like private label. I had access to all of their logos, which are like screen printed on rice paper. And the rice paper disappears when the resin hits it, and only the screen print stays.
Cool.
So we would make our own for our personal boards. We would cut up everybody's logos, and we would make it would say Austin Surfboards, and it would look like a ransom note because it was all these other letters cut out. Oh, man, you know,
that's good. Yeah. I think the secret here is just the ideas. I mean, even though she wasn't overly invested in materials, it was sending the instructions and motivate. And I didn't have to go buy. That's one thing. Like, say you wanted to do this on your own, that little bitty ornament, you'd have to buy a full piece of red, a full piece of white, a full piece of blue. You really do need a laser cutter to cut. I mean, you could do it with scissors, but the laser cutter made it better. So providing that stuff did help. And I think providing a coloring sheet or something would help, but just providing the direction was a big part of it.
Now, did you have a needle? She had said that she wasn't sure if you needed anything.
Obviously, I have needles, but she did send a needle with it, and I used the needle she sent.
Okay.
What it reminds me of, I know you guys don't have young kids, but every like third or fourth or whatever Saturday at Home Depot, they have a kids thing. Mm-hmm. And so I used to take my boys, and it would be every time was something different. So one time it was like a couple blocks of wood, and you hammer it all together, and it turns it into like a little Humvee. And it had like, I think it was for like Memorial Day or our Veterans Day or something. And so it had like American flags that you would stick on there, and then you could paint it, and it had wheels that you would hammer on. And
I think
like
it might
a Pinewood Derby.
Too expensive to ship, but Ed Johns is building that. Is it Ed building the Pinewood Derby car right now?
Yeah, for his scout troop.
Yeah. And when I see him build that, I was thinking, man, that would be something neat to have everybody build a Pinewood Derby car. I never built one. I was in Boy Scouts, but I guess we never, or Cub Scouts. I never made it to the Pinewood Derby stage of things.
Right. Yeah, that's I think that's something like that would be a cool something, but I think you're onto something with like the paper or something.
I think so too,
is lightweight.
If you're gonna mail, I think another idea then too is just pollinate a project. So you see a YouTube idea, hey, Adam Savage did this one day build. Look, I'm putting this challenge out to my friends. Let's all try to do our own version of this. You've got a month to get it done. Let's see what we come up with. I mean, a lot of these content creators are always looking for things. I think issuing challenges out and getting people involved draws eyes.
Definitely. I like that kind of stuff. Back in the surfboard days, again, I know two time trips, but the surfboard company that made the wood strip surfboard, they did a contest, and it was like who could be the most creative, and with a certain board, and it was like you end up getting those all of it for free, like the one that you bought, they refund you or whatever. And one of the coolest outside the box, literally outside the box ideas, one of the guys took the cardboard box that came in and turned it into a surfboard.
Oh wow.
You know, it even had like all the labels and stuff still on it, and it was really cool. But
it's cool.
Very unique. Thanks for joining us today. If you like this episode, please give us a review and subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on Instagram at Making Our Way Podcast or on Patreon. You can find all of our latest individual content on Instagram or YouTube. I'm at High Caliber Craftsman. Dean is at Dean_Duplantis. And Christy is at Twisted Twine Woodworking. Lick it, stick it, see you later, bye.
On our first tier, we've got Jacob with Griffin Makes, Jacob with Other Dog Design, Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concepts, Justin from Bear Maked, Jeff Stein, a weird guy, Dave Bauer, Caitlin Landerneau, Morley Kurt, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, Brendan McDonough from McDonough Designs, The Grant Alexander, Jen Griffin, the Black Sheep, Brian from Moonshine Leatherworks, The Makeshift Podcast, Maritime Knife Supply, Henry at HT1 Metalworks, Brad Harrison from Brad's Customs, Steve Delaney from One Old School Pirate, Kelsey Watson, Dan Gallagher with Goofballs by Dan, Chris Powell from Full Steam Design, Spaghetti and Waffles, Rebecca Johansson, Ira Housework, Ed Johns from BudJoints.com, David Beckwith, Rob DeMarco, Dave at Atomic Airship Works, Earl III, XYZ, Dana and Emmett at Rescue Room on Summit, Max at Camp Arrowhead, and Luke at LJB Makes.